This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And of course, if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Dry Cleaning. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, this session is really cool because we're dropping this session really close to the release of Dry Cleaning's latest album, which is awesome. And this is a slightly different project for them.
Well, Secret Love, I think, is their most accomplished release to date from a band, a London band, that has consistently released these absolutely sublime EPs and albums, including 2021's New Long Leg and Stumpwork in 2022. And I have to say that I have a special sentimental feeling about Dry Cleaning because I had tumbled into love with this band when I heard their first single ever. They came up to WFUV on March 6, 2020, and were the very last session that we did in the studio before the pandemic.
Wow.
And while we were sitting, and we talk about it in the interview, but while we were sitting there, South by Southwest got canceled. They were unsure about what to do. And the world completely shut down after that session. And in turn, the first live band that I saw when the pandemic began to ease was Dry Cleaning at Rockefeller Center. So everything about this band has, they're just such smart, lovely people. Florence and Tom and Lewis and Nick, they put their heart and their soul into their music. It is very unconventional. Florence is a wordsmith. She is a poet, and she has a lot to say and a lot on her mind. They are not shy about being political. They are not shy about talking about socioeconomic things, but they are also extremely witty and muscular and one of the best bands, I think, out there today making music.
Yeah, and we're going to hear some live songs. What is the first song that we're going to hear from this session?
This was the very first teaser off of Secret Love, which is their new album. And this is called Hit My Head All Day on FUV Live Sessions.
Signals telling us this or that, telling us
I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Dry Cleaning in Studio A with Hit My Head All Day, which is found on the London Quartet's third remarkable album, Secret Love, an album that distills our present times with gravity, rough beauty, and unflinching insight. World events for me will always connect with Dry Cleaning in Bookends, the last band to perform in FUV Studio A on March 6, 2020, before the pandemic lockdown, and the first band I saw live again at New York's Rainbow Room on November 18, 2021. Florence Shaw, Tom Dowse, Lewis Maynard, and Nick Buxton have earned avid fan and critical acclaim for their EPs and prior albums, 2021's New Long Leg and 2022's Stump Work. The latter won a Grammy for packaging. But with Secret Love, Dry Cleaning have made one of the most important, resonant, and accomplished albums of 2026, although we're just at the start of a very long year. I'm incredibly happy after 5 years to welcome Dry Cleaning to WFUV again. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
That was so nice. Thank you.
Oh, well, it is so nice to have you back after 5 years, because I remember sitting in the studio with you all in a panic because South by Southwest was shut down as you were here in the studio, and we didn't know what was going to happen next. Which is kind of where we are now, which kind of leads me to Secret Love. And I did want to talk to you all about the first line of Secret Love, which comes via Hit My Head All Day, which you just did. Is life a series of memorials and signals telling this or that, telling us this or this? Think of that, which sort of introduces the ride of this album. So why was it important that this particular song begin the odyssey of Secret Love?
It's a bit of a tentpole sort of song for the album. Also, I guess that line in particular speaks to quite a lot of the themes of the record. It's like this kind of idea of the things that people consume sort of, and how they affect them, like kind of different media or even social media or newspapers or whatever you consume, the way it kind of impacts on your thinking, how that's such a kind of theme of the current moment in a way, the sheer amount of images and messages that we're all receiving all the time, and yeah, just kind of thinking about how that shapes people's opinions. That I think about that a lot.
You know, there's a really remarkable video for Hit My Head All Day, which was the first single from Secret Love that came out in October, which is the time that we're talking in, although this is not going to be broadcast until next year, which is 2026. We're sort of time leaping here. But the video features Bully Ache, which is a dance duo. And I found out that you actually, every single song on this album is choreographed in a video with this group, and I'm wondering how you knew of them and where that idea came from.
They're a pair of artists, I guess, that we just came across them and kind of cold called them, really, like, you know, approached them out of the blue. We didn't know them personally before, but their work is just really arresting and yeah, just moving, I guess, but also quite funny at the same time. Like, they use a lot of kind of movements that are quite sort of absurd, but mixed with things that are quite sensual. I think we just sort of liked that combination, you know. And we asked them if they'd be interested in choreographing a different dance for every track on the album, and they were up for it.
And Lewis, you told me that you were actually dancing in the video, or the entire band is dancing?
They tried to teach me one of the dance moves. It was so hard. I didn't realize my ability to dance. I can't control, like, they make it look so easy. But yeah, I think we're all going
to
learn.
It's their job, to be fair.
Yeah. They can't play bass.
I bet they can't play the bass, you know?
I hope not.
So you worked with Kate LeBon on this record. You worked with John Parrish on your two other albums. And I'm wondering where that you had met Kate while you were on tour, or not on tour, but you were at the festival with Wilco. You were at Solid Sound.
No, it was before that, actually.
You met before.
We played Pitchfork Festival, and Jeff came to say hello.
Oh.
He was backstage and just came to say hi, and he invited us to visit the loft if we had some spare time that week. And when we did do that, Kate was there working on their record, on the Wilco record.
On Cousin.
Cousin, yeah, she was working on Cousin. So we briefly met then. And I don't think anyone was conscious of thinking we should ask Kate to produce. But there was definitely like a weird synergy to it. Like it definitely put her name in our minds because we sort of clicked with her straight away. She's very chill, very easygoing and very friendly. And then when we came round to talk to producers, she was just a name in the hat. And then we had a Zoom call. It was kind of like hand in glove, really, straight away.
And she's worked with John Grant. She's worked with Horse Girl. She's worked with a lot of bands. And has a really interesting imprint on her sound. Just released a new album herself. So because she is very different than John, is she more talkative than John? Because I know in the past you've said John Parrish doesn't talk a lot, but like he's, you know, very responsive to what you had wanted. What did Kate bring into the mix that sort of was different for you, especially with the series of songs that are on Secret Love? Nick?
I was actually just talking about this last night with someone. I think it's really interesting, the different emotional approaches of both of them, because there is largely a psychological process making an album. And John's approach is less is more. You know, he doesn't damn you with faint praise. Like, you know, if he likes something, you know, if he really, really thinks something is brilliant, he will tell you. But it's, you know, like, he's not just going to blow smoke in every direction. Whereas Kate, she does praise you a lot, but she finds a way to do it that really means something. And she will find the little niches in the things that you've done that you don't think anyone will notice. And she'll say, what you're doing there is brilliant. Keep doing it. And then even she can chase that with, but maybe just change it a little bit, do this, do that. But because she's identified the things that are important to you, it makes it easier to sculpt them, you know, and push them forwards and develop them, rather than, you know, just telling you something's, you know, sometimes she will just tell you something's inadequate or not very good, but like, because of her process and the way she thinks about it, it makes the development of ideas more possible.
Is there a specific instance that you can think of where Kate came in and altered the trajectory of a particular track?
Rocks is probably the most obvious one. There's definitely going to be others, but Rocks was definitely one because we had quite an evolved demo version of that that was quite divisive amongst us as well. Like, it was quite rocky. And I think we kind of always want to approach rock music askance, if you know what I mean. We don't want to sort of directly do it, so we were looking for some way to sort of scratch it up a bit, to like make it more sort of translucent or something. And we were finding that quite hard to do because the demo was so evolved. It's really hard to get away from something that's fully evolved. And she sort of just came in really and just kind of took a chisel to it, and we ended up with this kind of like industrial drum beat thumping away, and that became like the totem to work around, and then all the sounds formed around that. Even to the point where we're in the studio, she kind of made me redo the guitars 3 times because she was kind of like loosen up a bit, like, because my way of playing the guitar is always urgent. I'm always kind of, I think one of the features of the band is that I'm always kind of pushing the front of the beat and Nick is always pulling back, so it creates this kind of interesting sort of tension. But this was one instance where she was like, just like try and play it in a more casual way, and it took me ages to sort of trick my brain out of that. Because then I thought, you think you've done it. You're like, that was casual. And she'd go, yeah, try a bit more casual. And you're sort of like, I'm being as casual as I can imagine.
Wow.
But I really bought into it. When you work with someone like Kate, you sort of trust what they're saying is like, it's an interesting point of view. You know, you just take it as a sort of a challenge, really. Yeah.
You know, and that's interesting, as is Flo, your vocals on this are sort of change things up in a way, too, is that there's a lot of singing on this album from you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and certain songs like Secret Love, Concealed in a Drawing of a Boy, which is an extraordinary track, and what we're going to get to Evil, Evil Idiot as well. But there is more singing here.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that like for somebody who never expected to be fronting a band a long time ago?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I was drawn to do it purely for my own kind of entertainment, really, to do something that I feel less competent at, you know, kind of something which has vulnerability sort of built into it, because I'm not a trained singer in any way. And I do find singing quite hard, really. Like, I don't really have, like, the chops sort of thing. So, but I quite like to use that as an emotional kind of texture, because it's kind of, it's almost like singing in the shower or something, you know? And I just like that as an ingredient. It gives me just more to play with, aside from kind of spoken word, which feels like a very comfortable sort of form of expression for me now. It doesn't feel new anymore, because I've kind of, it's like my job now, right? Like, so it's like that kind of, you know, I'm very comfortable there, which is great. But yeah, I kind of missed not knowing what I was doing. So I decided to start singing.
You know, it's interesting too, because lyrically, assemblage is kind of the way that you constructed a lot of the lyrics. There is some, even though that exists in this album, there's some things that are more straightforward.
Yeah, for sure.
And thematically, you focus on a certain metaphor or a certain direction, which I found really interesting. And it's sort of, there's this heartbeat that ties the entire album together, like a breath, a gasp, a heartbeat, as if this, listening to a global body of some kind, of how we walk through the streets and how we sort of address a situation, whether that be world crises or what's happening in the United States or anything else. Mm-hmm. So was it lyrically, in terms of writing some of these songs, how did you write from a place of pain or anger, or how did you direct that particular feeling to capture a particular moment in a song?
Yeah, all of the above, really. I made a decision to use more writing that's off the cuff. So I wrote a lot in the rehearsal room rather than writing around and about, like on the bus, rather than writing little snippets and putting them together. I wrote much more, I suppose, just on the page, you know, top to bottom, listening to the guys playing and reacting purely to the sound of the music. The kind of emotional quality of the music, I guess, and kind of sort of searching within myself, I suppose, for what I could bring to it. And oftentimes, certainly throughout the year we were writing it, I did feel despair at times, sadness, certainly anger, all kinds of feelings like that, which I do think are on the record, but they're sort of, it's almost like got a it's almost got a meditative quality to it as well, in the sense of it's not like unbridled rage or anything. It's almost like slightly calcified, which I think is also a bit of a feature of how I was kind of feeling a lot of the time anyway. But then there's always that kind of humor that is also, I think, just generally how I cope with anything and everything, and it's also how I cope with songwriting too, I suppose. Yeah.
We're gonna hear evil idiot, which is sort of like in the center, and it's sort of like the center blood and evil idiot, which is, you went to Dublin with Gillibrand, right?
That's right.
So what did they sort of infuse in your approach to these songs that they helped you sort of figure out?
Well, we had an invitation to work at the Loft eventually from Jeff
Tweedy.
Yeah. And
you did it, didn't you? Not to divert, and we'll go back to Dublin. Yeah. But didn't you, instead of being paid for the festival that you did, you asked for studio time, which was so clever.
That's our manager Tim's idea.
Tim is clever.
It was really smart, because it was kind of, that Loft experience came at the beginning of the demoing for the album. Yeah. We'd written some stuff, and it was the first studio experience. And it's like, what a great experience to have straight off the bat. And Wilco, it's not a commercial studio. It's just their personal one. They do have bands go in there, but they invite them. So it was a real sort of feather in your cap, really, to like have that encouragement from people like that. It kind of made you feel like they wanted you to be there, which is a big thing from a band like Wilco. You know what I mean? It's very encouraging.
And before we move to Dublin, several of those songs sort of developed there, like The Cute Thing, Secret Love, Concealed in the Drawing of a Boy, and Let Me Grow and You'll See Fruit, I don't want to say softer songs because they have edge, but the more sort of Wilco studio friendly songs.
What we came out with from the Loft was it sounded like a dry cleaning version of Wilco.
Oh.
In a way, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, I was literally sat in Nels Klein's chair playing his amp with Jeff's guitars and stuff like that. So you are absorbing the atmosphere, but that's kind of why you go to a studio. You are looking to absorb some of that stuff. But the reason why we wanted to go and work in Dublin with Alan and Daniel was we've always felt from the beginning there's a harsher side to dry cleaning or a more extreme side, whatever that means, and we wanted to explore it. So when we went to work with them, that's literally what they did. They just threw the kitchen sink at everything, really. And we came out with demos there. We actually did a version of a song called Sliced by a Fingernail, which isn't on the album, but it will be coming out after. And the version we did at Loft, it was like we were trying to push it all the time to just be, let's just go for it. Let's just like turn it up to 11. And I think when you're saying that to someone, an engineer or whoever, you're kind of like, they're at the limit of their taste profile. So to them, they are turning up to 11, but it wasn't our 11. And I think we really wanted to know what that was like. And when you work with people like Daniel and Alan, they're working at like 111. So we would do things that we thought were like pretty far out and they'd be like, this isn't far out. So it was a really good experience to sort of like, sometimes you just need to rip things up and like make a bit of a mess. Not that it was a mess, but like sometimes you need to just like go there to realize what it is. And it was kind of a turning point for us, because then when Kate heard the stuff we did in Dublin, it was a big help for her to know this is where they're coming from. And she totally was into that stuff, the sort of industrially, how would you describe it, like quite industrial, quite gauzy, abstract stuff,
right?
You know, and she brought that into what she was doing then. Yeah.
And so evil Idiot came out of where did that come from? That wasn't done in Dublin, that particular track, or was that Nick? Yeah. Or Lewis?
It was demoed in Dublin,
but then we
completely re-recorded it. But the
in France with
in
Kate,
France,
yeah.
Yeah, with Kate, the fingerprint is still there,
right?
From what Alan and Dan kind of did with the track, it was originally like it was kind of like Tom had these two kind of doomy guitar riffs, and they were just kind of hanging around for a while. We didn't really know what to do with it, and that often quite happens with dry cleaning material where we just kind of sandwich things together, and then it kind of goes from there, because it's quite a simple song, really. But then what we did with Alan and Dan was we really took those kind of the verses where there is no guitar. It's like creating like the kind of light and darkness in the track. They really kind of maximized that, and they added it was kind of like with the drums how they just kind of made it. It was heavier. It was more dubby. I remember Tom at the time you were saying it was like, you know, it's kind of like something like sounded like Massive Attack or something like that, which is not somewhere we've ever been, you know, thematically as a band, really. And they were just pushing kind of that side of things. And it sort of, you know, the track was just two riffs before that. And then they kind of helped us turn it into a song. Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you're going to do it today. And we'll talk a little bit more after it, especially the metaphor that Florence has come up with. I'm Cara Manning with FUV Live Sessions. Dry Cleaning is in Studio A, and from their new album, Secret Love, this is Evil, Evil Idiot.
Surfaces that has migrated onto my precious natural ingredients. Could never live with someone who didn't enjoy scorched and burnt foods as much as me. Well-fired rolls and burnt ends, another burnt dish from another place. There have been malicious studies that discredited heavily carbonized foods as carcinogenic, but it didn't put me off. One needs to enjoy life, and my only access route to blissful enjoyment is those burnt foods. The taste, the tang, the flame-kissed natural fibres, frozen at the moment of their incineration. These is what I live for. I cannot feel it. Oh, increases the likelihood that the chemicals inside will leach into your food and drink and into your body, where they will do their damage. I cannot feel it. The rain, the valley of black. Underneath, I cannot feel it. I've got real muscly hands and sick legs. They hurt me, and the boys explode. And my teeth, they are old, and my shoes, they aren't the right ones. But I'm young, I'm old, young. I ache and worry a lot about what people think of me. Christmas TV on my mind, Christmas TV all the time. The neighbor, the worm, the spider, they love it. Toasted. Roasted. I don't want to be lectured by even a coffee cup lid. That's right.
FUV Live Sessions, Dry Cleaning with Evil, Evil Idiot, the studio version of which can be found on their new album, Secret Love. I'm Kara Manning. I'm here with Flo and Tom and Nick and Lewis. And I do, before we step away from that song, Florence Brava for finding the perfect way of using a metaphor to the nth degree.
Thanks.
Was there a particular steak that came into the headlines that sort of influenced that?
You know what? Not really. It's hard to, I think it was like a reaction to that kind of stonery doom kind of riff. I kind of thought, oh, I don't know. I sort of pictured fire, and then I thought like, okay, like flames. And then I thought like, oh, I don't know. For some reason, I started to think about burnt food and maybe the idea of some kind of like extremely, I don't know, like a person who really loves eating burnt things. For some reason, that just like made me laugh, because it's like an intense, that's like quite an intense thing to do. And I was just trying to think of like somebody who's just like really full on, and like a bit too full on maybe, or just like obsessive or something. But then it kind of evolved into thinking about like food generally, but also just like desire, wanting things that are bad for you, or yeah, just being very staunch in some kind of bizarre opinion and kind of proselytizing it to everybody. And yeah, it's like a weird mood board of different thoughts and ideas about like poisons and fire and like all sorts, really. I think one day I'll figure out what it's about, but it's gonna take me a while, I think.
It's amazing. Much of this album made me reflect back on the particularly beautifully eloquent way you addressed South by Southwest in 2024. Oh, yeah. And yeah, you spoke on stage prior to your set, one of your sets that I saw, about the infiltration of arms manufacturers into culture and art, and what that meant, and how that disturbed you. And it feels that as if there's bringing a sociopolitical perspective into music isn't always easy. And recently I've been like deep diving into two-tone records, you know, and how that spun out of Rock Against Racism, and you know, and reading a couple of books on that, and how Jerry Dammers and the Specials were trying to do something that was different and that meant something. And in a conversation that I had, we were trying to think of other bands like Massive Attack or Young Fathers or Idols that also tried to bring that perspective in a really powerful way to their music. And I would say that this album, what Dry Cleaning has accomplished, I feel like people will point to in the future as being, that's the kind of album that we were talking about. And I would imagine it was, I mean, you're not kids. You didn't start this band as kids. Mm. It was important for you to have something that was not only artistically resonant, but also spoke to the broader world, I would imagine. I just talked a lot, but so now I'm handing it off to you.
No, but I mean, it is impossible to put up fences. Well, I find it impossible to put up fences between your sort of thoughts about the world around you and what you make. I find that wild. I would just, I don't know how I would go about writing and my thoughts and feelings and reactions to the things I see around me, and also our context as a band, you know, when we find ourselves on certain stages or whatever. I can't, it's too much, you know, to just censor your feelings or to not address things. Just seems to me a small alarm goes off when you realize like something needs to be said at this point, because I suppose we all find ourselves in very conflicting situations a lot of the time in the modern world, but sometimes they are beyond the pale, you know, and you just want to give an honest representation of what's happening inside. I think maybe especially as a vocalist, because I'm speaking and they're my thoughts and feelings, and then it seems odd to kind of ring fence some over in the corner and not necessarily share those. But it's a difficult thing to do, very difficult. It's hard to have the gumption to do that. It's very hard and increasingly hard. So yeah, it's an interesting subject, but certainly South by Southwest felt like the time to do that for sure.
Did you kind of look back on that experience at all in the formulation of Secret Love and the songs that you were doing? Did that sort of influence anything at all?
It may have done, not consciously, but it may have done. It was certainly right before we started writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may have done.
I feel like I'm being negligent of Lewis, and I just have to say that your bass playing throughout this album is extraordinary. It's all the, like, just grand, funky.
Thank you.
Like, just stunning.
Well, Kate's a great bass player as well.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
And
yeah, yeah.
Plays bass on other records, as like, too. So, yeah. Yeah, I had a great time. I really enjoyed myself.
Is there any bass challenges that Kate gave you that?
Yeah. On, what's the song?
Let Me Grow.
Yeah, Let Me Grow. She kind of kept rejecting my bass lines for it, which I've never had before. And it was really, I really liked the challenge. It was really fun. But I thought we was all quite happy with kind of where it was. We demoed it at the Loft, and she was like, no, we need to change it. And we never got it done in the studio. So then I came back to London, and I'd send her different bass lines, and she'd be like, no. And then she came to London. It was quite harsh.
That hurts.
But I was up for the challenge. And then she came to London for like 2 days, and we kind of did a few overdubs, and I kind of came in, I did it, and I was really happy with the final bass line on it. But it took a while. It was quite surprising how much she was rejecting them.
Yeah. But are you happy with how it ended up?
I'm really happy. Yeah, yeah.
Lewis got away making two albums with John, who never told him that he should change anything. John would be like, drums are crap. Yeah, do the vocal again. Yeah, the guitar's not right. And Lewis, he never told you that the bass, I mean, the bass lines are always great. But yeah, he loved you.
Yeah, yeah. We just played, I feel like me and John just played table tennis together. And that was it.
Well, you know, I could just talk to you for hours, you know. Flo and Tom and Lewis and Nick and I, but I can't talk to you for hours, so we're going to have to wrap up this interview. You're going to play, I'm so happy that you chose to play three songs from Secret Love today, and we're going to end this session on what is the last song on the album, which is Joy. Mm. And I was just the song is amazing because there's reminders to stay sweet. Mm. There's reminders that it's a horror land and destruction. There's reminders of we'll build a cute, harmless world with cute, harmless gardens. I can't figure out if it's a hopeful song or one of infinite despair. Mm. And I guess I'm asking all of you, is it a hopeful song that ends the album or one of infinite despair?
I find it quite uplifting to play.
Yeah.
Personally, like, I find the melodies of it are very sweet, and it's kind of, it's energetic and it's catchy, and I think those things always resonate, you know. Mm. Particularly performing, I don't know about what people listening to it think, but that's how it feels to play it. Yeah.
Mm. Without wanting to sound too grandiose, like, yeah. I think it's asking you the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to. Yeah, it's silly to say, ooh, we're at a crossroads or something like that. But you, when times are quite divisive, you know, you're kind of, you have to really ask yourself a lot of questions. You know, it forces you to sort of confront a lot of things that you have previously kind of taken for granted, or, you know, not really had to encounter. And I think you're asking yourself essentially, you know, where do I go from here? You know, what's important to me? These are sorts of things, I guess. It's nice to provoke people to think about with your last song on an album. You know, it's kind of an open question.
Flo, how hard was it to sort of really distill the lyrics for this?
Oh, yeah, it took quite a while. I was determined for them to be quite brief in a way, which isn't my forte, you know. But I thought a lot about this musician called Dean Rodney Jr., who is a London-based musician. He's got a great band called Dean Rodney Jr. and the Cowboys. And a lot of his lyrics are just so, I mean, they're amazing. But they're often quite sort of striking phrases, you know. It's like quite sort of brief in a way. And I was really inspired by that approach. And also Kate talked to me a lot about that. We really got into it on this song about what the right approach was. Because there are like synths as well in the song that are a vocal sample of my voice, so it's already like there was so much going on and so much that was really lovely about the song that it was kind of like wanting to do a vocal that was just a bit more spare in a way to kind of add something to the song. It's so interesting that you say that about this, about the thing of, you know, sort of hopeful versus kind of despair. That's totally how I see the song. It's kind of, it feels like a bit of a doomed attempt in a way at cheerfulness. But at the same time, I really feel the words of it quite strongly, really. But it's almost like, a lot, like Nick was saying, this thing of like two different directions, but feeling them both very much at the same time, I guess. Like that's, yeah.
It's an extraordinary song and an amazing way to end what I just really feel is my favorite album of 2026. And I say that in 2025.
Oh,
I'm just so blown away
so
by this album.
Thank you.
Secret Love is the name of the album. I also have to mention that Josh Egerton joins you on keys. Mm-hmm. He's your touring keyboardist as well. So yeah, shout out to Josh.
Yeah.
And I also have to make mention before we go into the song that I am a devoted fan of Amoeba Music's What's in My Bag series, you did.
Yeah.
And boy, I loved every single thing you guys picked. Everything from like Barry Manilow to Bill Evans and Yasuaki Shimizu. I'm sorry, I mispronounced his name. But Liturgy, everything was, that was a great, really fun Amoeba music to watch.
That was fun to do.
It was.
Yeah.
So Dry Cleaning, you have to come back soon.
Yeah,
thank you
please.
So
please.
Much.
Thank you.
Flo, Tom, Lewis, Nick, a privilege. For FUV Live Sessions, I'm Kara Manning, and this is Dry Cleaning in Studio A with Joy. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a horror. Don't
That was Dry Cleaning performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in the studio and to 4AD and Beggars Group. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Thomas Lapis, Nadia Gariga, and Holden Buckley. Our FUV Live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Ina Volovich and Gwen Taylor. Megan Suma is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and maybe find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear so other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.